Welcome to the first episode of the Mobile Storytelling Podcast with me, Björn Staschen, in Hamburg.
And me, Wietse Vellinga, in Friesland, in the Netherlands. This podcast is about how to tell a story with your smartphone. And this time we have a guest, Nick Garnett from the north of England.
Nick is one of the pioneers in mobile storytelling, using his smartphone for journalism for quite some years now, working from home now, as many of us, because of Corona. Nick, how is work for you in these days?
I wish it was quiet. I see people talking all the time about what they're doing and the decorating they're doing in their houses and all the work that they're doing and the books that they're reading. I haven't had a second. I've never been busier, really. But getting on air has been really difficult. But it's all the other work that I've been doing. So I've been trying, I work for the BBC for Radio 5 Live, which is the news and sport network of the BBC. So it's a national radio station. And it's got about sort of 6 million listeners on a good day, 2 million listeners on a not very good day, but an awful lot of people listening. And really, they want quite good quality. So I've been trying to work behind the scenes to try and make sure that we sound good whilst we're in this period of lockdown in the UK, because we've been in it now for about 2 to 3 weeks.
It means you're helping others, right, to set up their studios at home.
Yeah, so we're setting up their studios for them, because basically people didn't have any equipment at all. Now, us three, we've always had equipment. We've always been able to broadcast from home or wherever we are. I've been on the road for, well, over 20 years. It's about 26 years now that I've been sort of like just working. I don't like calling it working from home, but working on the road. And so it's like second nature to me. It doesn't mean anything to me being not in an office. I haven't been in an office and working in an office long time for years. So I'm used to it, but an awful lot of people aren't. And that means that they haven't got the equipment. They don't know how to use the equipment. The equipment that they might have isn't robust enough to do a whole 3 hour long program. And people don't know how to do things like recording Skype calls, recording WhatsApp calls, getting audio off FaceTime, all those sort of things that we try to think of as second nature. And to many people, it's just a completely alien language. And absolutely, that's totally understandable. But my work has been in the background trying to make sure that those type of things can actually work and it can be seamless and we can still have the range of broadcasting that we have, so that we don't suddenly go from quite a really smart sounding radio station to something very clunky.
So how big are the parcels you send over to them? How much equipment do they need?
It depends. Sometimes it's a cable. That's all that they need. The conversation normally goes, it's a phone call. And it's like, Nick, how do I broadcast? And there's a moment where you just think, oh, no. How am I going to start this one? Right, so what equipment have you got? And they'll say, nothing. And you're like, okay, fine. Right, so have you got a phone? Yes. What is it? An Android. And that's
which
really
is a good thing, right? I mean, we go into that in episode 27, I think. Until then, we could just avoid it. But basically, both phones work, right?
Yeah, it's difficult. The way that the BBC is set up, it works better with iPhones because of the apps that we use. So if you look at it on a scale, you have your starting point would be getting Lucy Live, which is a voice over internet protocol type program, a bit like Skype, except slightly better quality without the sea wishing in the background all the time. And so we get that on their phones. And then they've got to have the way to talk into the phone and the way to be able to hear the program.
But you can Lucy Live, is that for everyone? Or do you need kind of a company and a server in the background to use it?
Well, you can get it working without servers. You can basically, as well as voice over internet protocol, there's also SIP, which I don't understand fully because it's a whole different language to me. And it's people with very pointy heads that understand that. And I've not got a pointy head, got a nice round bald one, thanks to my wife's haircut in the last couple of weeks. So basically these programs work by punching an internet connection between your device and my device, or my device and your device. And it can do it in various ways, and you can use various versions of it. Comrex make a free one. There's one called Linphone, I think, which is free. It's really just a high-quality version of Skype or WhatsApp audio or FaceTime audio.
And that is if you want to kind of broadcast, you know, if you want to hear the studio, if you want to talk, if you want talk back and everything. If it's just about recording a podcast, you wouldn't go into Lucy Live and all that. What you're talking about is proper radio shows like you do them on Radio 5 Live from home.
Yeah, it's broadcasting rather than having a conversation like you and I are having a conversation now. There would be no point in us talking over Lucy Live at the moment. But that's the method that we've been going as version one, because that's a fairly easy, fairly straightforward way with very little hardware. You can just use the headphones that come with an iPhone, or you can just use a normal pair of headphones into the phone and just talk into the microphone on the iPhone, the internal microphone. And it's good enough to get going, especially if you're outdoors, because when you're outdoors, the sound sort of like just sort of like merges in and it sounds great. I've been using the internal microphone of the iPhone with Lucy Live and with other live reporting apps for over 10 years now. And nobody has ever said, oh, you know, that microphone doesn't really sound as if it's 20 to 20 kilohertz. You know, nobody cares. It's what you're saying that's more important. Isn't that the most important thing about everything that we're talking about and that we need to go through? So that's stage one. You then get to the area where you've got a presenter presenting a program for 3 hours. Now, I don't know about you, but my phone battery only really lasts about 3 hours before it starts to give off warning messages. You don't want that happening when you're trying to broadcast a program to millions of people. So then we put in other bits of software, and there are all sorts of different ones. I mean, in the old days, it used to be that we'd use ISDN lines, which were these hardwire point-to-point communications between dedicated landlines, and they were fantastic, but they're incredibly expensive, probably about 50-60 euros a month in terms of line rental, on top of huge costs to install. So that's just not a go. We haven't got the money. Nobody else has got the money now. So we've gone over to IP.
But does that mean that you broadcast your program from home, that you're the complete 3 hours are from home?
Yep, and we've got most of our programs now being presented from home.
And how does your studio look like at home? I mean, how...
My studio...
Does it look like a studio, or are you sitting on a sofa and...
I'm sitting on a sofa, because basically, you know, sofas are the best way of making your voice sound as natural
as possible. Takeaway number one, so record on sofas, very good.
Yeah, record on sofas or record into sofas. So if you turned round and actually talked into the sofa and had the microphone on the sofa.
Which is less comfy, really, but...
It is, yeah, and you're on your knees, and that's not good for 3 hours, really, is it? But that's sort of like stage two, that we get this various bits of hardware in, or laptops. The danger is, with everything, is that what we try and do, and we try and do it with phones all the time, is we try and just do a little bit too much with a piece of software or hardware. So, you know, you'll say to people, oh, yes, you can use your phone. And then they'll say, oh, can I take photographs at the same time as I'm broadcasting? Like, yeah, possibly. And can I also read scripts and emails off it? Yeah. Can I send emails off it at the same time as I'm broadcasting and taking photographs? I'm like, yeah, you possibly can. And basically, the thing's going to fall over. It's great at doing one thing. It's okay at doing two things. But give it three things to do at the same time, and you're really, really pushing it.
The funny thing is, the first thing I ever saw of you, Nick, was a YouTube video you made where you explained that the phone can do so many things at the same time.
So it was really important that you stayed as low key as possible. Now, we were able to do it because I used the phone just like this to broadcast in quality.
It did the job of a laptop computer, a BlackBerry, an audio recorder, a stills camera, a video camera, a television, a radio, and indeed, a radio car.
Right, so that was a day. That was a day. And that was a time, really, when we were really pushing the boat to see what we could do with a phone. So up to that point, we had used satellite transmitters, which were big dishes that you put on the top of your car, and that would then go into a load of extra equipment which would sit in the boot of your car. It took you two big bags to carry around, or a rucksack that was so big, and it was really, really heavy equipment. And so the iPhone came along.
Which iPhone was that? And we realized came along when you started.
It was the iPhone 3GS that really had the capability of doing it, because that was when the App Store came along. Because up to the 3GS, I don't think it had an app store, did it? So that was when it could start to be developed. But even before then, before iPhones, Lucy Live were looking at using any other device that they could possibly find that connected to the internet. So they had some bizarre personal organizers that ran it, and it was frankly awful, and nobody dared trust it. It was only really when the iPhone came in that the technology and the speeds of connectivity started to improve, and it became viable, and it became something that you could pretty much depend on. But the first time that I ever used it, I had it on my phone for months and months. And I don't know if you've ever done this, where you have an app on your phone, you're just scared of using it. You don't want to use it. Because a lot of the time, they're not very well written at first. And it's only when the developers start to see what people want to use them for that they start to hone the technology behind them. So I had Lucy Live on my phone from about September till about late November.
What year are you talking
this
about?
Was in about to get this idea. Is I'm trying to think. This is when the Labour Party in England, in Britain, elected a new leader. So I think it was probably...
Was it still Tony Blair?
No, it wasn't. Thank you. That was about 1994, so an awful lot later than that. This was Ed Miliband who got in. Can you have a dig around and just see what year it is? And I'll just carry on nattering. But anyway, Ed Miliband got voted in. And I was doing a live from his constituency. And it was pouring down with rain. It was hammering down. It was incessantly. It was just horrible, horrible weather. And I thought, this is the time now I've got to get out of the car. And I didn't have a coat for some stupid reason. And put my satellite on the top of the car and set all that up, point it in the right direction, hold on to the blasted thing so it didn't blow away because it was basically like a sail on the top of your car. And then get all that organised, get all that set up, and then broadcast to the nation and actually talk sense. Now, that's not as easy as it sounds. So anyway, so I thought, I want to stay dry. So all I did was I wound the window down and I used Lucy Live and I connected to the studio. But I was so scared of the producers getting really angry with me before using this new technology. I didn't tell them. I didn't tell them what I was using at all and just popped up into the studio. And they went, OK, he's on a satellite, and put me on air. And we did the whole piece. And it was only afterwards that I actually explained to them what they were doing. And I expected them then to be really, really great and go, wow, you are a trailblazer, you're fantastic. Instead, I got, and I hope I can use this word, bollocked. Because frankly, I got so much trouble for risking using this new technology that nobody had tested before. But it worked.
If it hadn't worked,
it would have been the satellite's fault, and I'd have never, ever
admitted. No, I would have noticed.
But it did.
Except you.
Exactly.
Which is another takeaway.
That was the first time.
And I can. Vitsa has a question, but just it. You know, I've been doing that quite often as well with video. Don't tell anyone if you try things for the first time. If they work out fine, good for you. If they don't work out, you know, still keep it to yourself.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's a really good way of getting to know how to use your own apps as well. Because I don't know if about you, but I know really about 50% of what each good app can do. And I only know about five apps. And I only use about five apps. And someone I'm sure you're going to talk to at some stage, Mark Settle at the BBC, he has hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of apps on his phone. And I haven't got a brain big enough to know how to use them all. And guess what? Neither does he. So that was the idea. That was the starting block.
But did it convince your producers that it was safe to use it?
It started the process, and they started to... It's still going on, that process.
Right.
And I'm trying to think. It's probably about 15 years now that we've been using it. I think it's probably about 15
years. And it might
years.
Be these when... days with the corona crisis where we finally see a breakthrough because so many people have to use it.
I also think that what will happen with the coronavirus outbreak is that we will probably not go back to the way that we were working before, so that the changes that we're bringing in now will stay to some degree. And people won't think, oh, working from home, he's skiving off, which is what they've always thought and they've always sort of like intimated in the past. They'll actually just realize that it's a better way of working and that you can use the same technology, the same amount of technology can actually get you on air and sounding just as good as normal. You know, yes, the kids sometimes walk in. Yes, you know, the doorbell sometimes goes in the middle of a broadcast. The phone can go as well and it'll be my mother-in-law or something like that. All those sort of things can happen. But if you just accept that that's part of normal life, I don't think it's a problem.
Just another quick question for a takeaway. For recording and for editing, which app did you use on your phone?
Right. So there have only ever been two apps on a phone that have done recording and editing properly. And that the first one was one called Vodeo, which goes back a long,
which
long
is a video
way,
right
back to the beginning.
Right?
And you used which is a video, audio. But yeah, exactly. It started off as an audio app called Podio, oh, yeah. And then became the video version of it, Vodeo. Oh, really? And yeah, it wasn't that great as a video editing app. It wasn't terrible, but it was limited very much by the technology of the time. But the audio side, basically, our phones, any phone, from an iPhone 3GS now, an iPhone 4, can do audio just as well as an iPhone 10, iPhone 11, 11 Pro, anything. They're just as good, or nearly as good, and they're good enough. So there was Vodeo, and then the other one was Ferrite. Now, Ferrite is developed by, I just think he's the best developer in the world, because I get in touch with him and say, I really wish that I could import WhatsApp audio, which was Ogg Vorbis at one stage. And he'll go, okay, fine, I'll come back the next day. And there's an update there with it ready. So it was written in with journalists in mind. And there are very, very few programs that we can actually say that about. Because this is, I mean, I don't want to get into the whole Android debate, but that's been the problem with Android, that a lot of the audio editing and audio recording apps have been designed for musicians. And journalists and musicians are slightly different creatures.
Yeah, we talked about that last time. It's Audio Evolution Mobile on Android. Yeah. And we are basically, we are, in fact, using Ferrite to record this podcast. You are having your recording running where you are in the north of England. Witzer has his recording running. I got my Ferrite running and we glue it all together because it has a good quality, is easy to use, and even free if you only use, I think, 3 tracks or something.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, you can use, I think it's 4 tracks and you can record for an hour.
Yeah.
So, interestingly, we're using Ferrite now because of what's happening in the world at the moment to record podcasts that are going out on 5Live and on BBC Sounds, on the BBC's podcasts app. And we're doing that, you know, because it all sounds the same. That's the great thing about it. And it's just a fantastic pro. It's basically Adobe Audition on a phone. And people say, oh, but my fingers are too fat, or I can't possibly do it. You just zoom in, just as you would do if you were editing a photograph. It's just like editing text, but with waveforms. It takes my breath away every time. And the first time I ever used it, I was sitting in a coffee shop in Scarborough, which is a little seaside town in the east coast of England. And I'd driven 150 miles to get there, opened up the boot of my car, and found that I'd left all my equipment back home. And there was no way that I could go and get the equipment from anywhere else. I didn't have a laptop. I couldn't go and buy a laptop and install all the software. All I had with me was my phone. And I went out and recorded and sat down in a coffee shop, bought myself a cup of coffee, edited the audio, pressed send, and then that was it. And really, that was amazing. I was over. Can I tell you another story? There was a time I came over. I think it was not far from you, Witzer, actually, at a home for people with dementia.
Hogeve is a care home in northern Holland with its very own supermarket, restaurant, and even its own pub. All the people living here have dementia, but are allowed free rein inside the walled village. The only door with a lock on is the one that leads outside.
We count it as a home. To give people the possibility to live a normal life as possible.
And I'd flown over in the morning, gone there on the train, did my recording till about 12:30, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and then I was supposed to come back to the UK, edit with a producer at the BBC for 2 days, and then finish the 10-minute long piece. And it would go out on the Friday. So this was the Wednesday, I think it was. So anyway, so I got back on the train. I got to the airport. I had an hour's wait. I had the 1 hour flight back to the UK. And when I got back to the UK, I pressed send on my phone because in the background, on the plane on the way over, I'd edited the piece. I then phoned the producer and said, I've done the piece. It's in your intro. And he's like, but we've got 2 days to do it. We've got 2 days of editing to do it in the studio. And I'm like, yeah, but it's done. And they listen to it, and you can't tell any difference. It actually sounds better having been done on the hoof on the field, because it's more lively, it's more interesting, you're more part of the actual programme that you're listening to and you're making. And it's not sort of like done 6 months before and then you're trying to remember what the heck you talked about. It's just a much, much better way of working. You're building things like building blocks like Lego or whatever, like you're building radio and you're building pieces and you're building stories. It's a fantastic way of working.
Yeah, it's one of the fun things of working with Ferrite and working on a phone and working as a mobile journalist in general, is that you are far more in touch with your material than you were in, let's say, the old days. Don't you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. And even now, I mean, especially at the moment, what we're seeing at the moment, is, taking this away from the radio side, my wife is a TV reporter in the BBC as well. And she's working at the moment with a camera operator who is three counties away. So that's, he's about probably 60, 70 kilometers away from us, and a producer who's 100 kilometers away from us. And she's sitting in our house working here, and all the shots are being brought in, over the internet from all over the country. I'm there with I use a little Osmo Pocket to film her, and I'll film her piece to camera, and they will build from nothing in the morning, a piece for the main BBC News in the evening. And they're doing it now in the same way that we've been doing it in radio. So really, we're all changing and we're all developing.
There was one,
and TV is really, really taking this on board.
There was one aspect, you both said you are more in touch with your material. I remember us talking about another advantage. You said you didn't go into the newsroom very often. So you were sitting in cafes. You were listening to people while you were editing. You were much more in touch with topics, subjects, people. So the phone made you actually a better journalist because you kind of listened more. Your antennas were out there.
Right. So there are in BBC Radio 5 Live, we have about 15 reporters that are based around the UK. And a couple of years ago, there was the Brexit vote in Britain.
Really?
What a time.
Are you really leaving the European Union? No.
No.
What a strange thing to... No.
That's a crazy thing. Anyway, so it was coming around to the Brexit vote. And all the opinion polls were saying that everything was going to go fine for the Remain vote and everything was going to be okay. And the Remain vote would be a solid vote and everything would be good. And we were going out as reporters and sitting in coffee shops and sitting and listening to people.
Yeah.
And that wasn't what we were hearing. And we came in and we talked to the editors and said, you know, this is not the message we're hearing. Every time we go out, there is such vitriol, there's such anger, there's pure hatred. You know, we've got to be aware of this. And lo and behold, we were the ones that were right. And the official view that everything was going to be somehow fine for the Remain campaign, you know, it was totally wrong. And that was because we were listening and we were hearing. Okay, we couldn't actually... One of the problems that the BBC had at that time was that we weren't in a position to be able to explain what we were hearing because we had to be balanced. That's the way that the BBC is. But that was the message. And very, very often you'll hear and you'll be aware of things happening just by listening in. So, you know, now here we are. What am I allowed to do? I'm allowed to walk 2 meters away from somebody as I go for a run. I've got to run down the middle of the road. Luckily, there are no cars on the road, so it's safe. But all the time, all I hear from everybody is them talking about the coronavirus. It's the only thing. And you know, as a radio station, we've been broadcasting about coronavirus 24 hours a day for 3 weeks now. And somebody said to me, one of the editors said to me, do you think we're doing too much? Do you think we need to back off a little bit and maybe cover some other stories? I haven't heard a single conversation that's not been about coronavirus for a month in the UK now. And it's that serious and people are taking it that seriously. And that's what we've got to reflect. And you only ever find that out if you're out and if you're listening to people. And that's, I think, the whole thing behind mobile journalism. It's not the equipment that's mobile. That's the big mistake that people think. That, you know, it's about the equipment. It's about the journalist being mobile. It's about the journalist being out there, not tied to a desk, not tied to an office, being out, part of the community, actually reporting on what they're hearing.
I totally agree with you, Nick, but just if people are listening to this and the phone is the only piece of equipment they have. You already said something about it, but what would your advice be to how to go out and use that as a journalism tool right now?
Never stop recording. You know, you've got a massive memory on that thing. Get rid of those blasted stupid games that you've got on there. Get rid of all those apps. Free up space on it and just start recording. Just start actually gathering material. I go out, I started running about a year ago, and I'm running around the area where I live, and I'm seeing parks with no children, and I'm seeing roads with no cars, and I'm seeing buildings in Manchester, which is about 9 miles away, 12 kilometers away from where I live. And I can see the buildings because there's no pollution there. That's not going to be the same very soon. Once life gets back to normal, whenever that is, the pollution will come down. The roads will be full again. The parks will be full. The schools will be full. We are seeing things that we will never, ever see. It's not, people say, oh, it's like Christmas Day. It's not like Christmas Day. It's completely and utterly silent. There was a fantastic piece in the British Guardian newspaper a couple of weeks back that I think they'd actually taken from one of the newspapers in Berlin, which was a series of photographs that you could swipe from right to left and see the version before the lockdown and the version after it. And that's a great way of using the technology that we can do by gathering with phones and showing pictures before and afterwards.
So
and
basically what you're saying is not just journalists get out there and record this remarkable period, but everybody with a phone just get out there and tell stories.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the whole thing is, you know, what is a journalist now? I mean, if I've got any problem with the term mojo, mobile journalist, it's that we're all mobile storytellers of some description. Anybody who wants to actually pass on some information, whether it's a tweet, whether it's a Facebook message, whether it's any single thing, now has the capability. This device that we have is so overwhelmingly brilliant at being able to tell people where we are and what we can see. If you imagine it 10, 20, 30 years ago, you simply didn't have that capability. A short little interlude, right? So I was...
I don't think short little interludes, by the way.
I'll try. Okay. Anyway, right. Oh, let's see. I'll do the very shortest version I possibly can. I was sitting in a hotel with the Liverpool football team after they'd won the 2001 UEFA Cup. And the manager of Liverpool came over to me and said, do you want to hold the trophy? Of course I do. Of course I want to actually, you know, hold the trophy. And he gave me the trophy and I sat with the trophy on my knee and there was no way I could get a photograph of it. I didn't have a camera. Phones didn't have cameras. That image is gone forever. Now, every single thing that we see and we experience can be captured. We have to embrace that and use that. That is the most amazing thing that this generation is going to take forward, the ability to capture life.
Nick, we're nearly at the end of our a little podcast. How does Corona affect you personally? I mean, are you limited in the way
I'm
you
terribly
can go
limited.
Out and you work about in these days?
I'm not allowed to actually go out. I'm not allowed to go out of my house. I'm diabetic, and therefore I am classed in the UK as vulnerable, and that means that the BBC is being the most wonderful employer. It's just said, that's it. You know, you don't go out. And I was like, well, can I go to the shops? No, you can't go to the shops. You can go for your run and that's it. You don't get in touch with people. You stay completely in. So everything that I record at the moment in terms of stories has been through recordings that have been sent to me via Skype or people have recorded on voice memos. So an awful lot of it is coaching answers out of people or getting a WhatsApp conversation going or recording on Skype. It's a whole different way of working. And isn't that a fantastic thing?
Imagine Garnett, who hadn't gone into using his phone and who hadn't gone into technology, but who had just stayed a journalist who relied on others for all technological questions. How would that Nick Garnett feel in these days?
Probably out of work. And if not now, then probably out of work in the very near future. I think that this technology that we have the chance to use now is the way for us to keep our jobs, to keep our careers, to keep rebuilding ourselves. I've worked for this part of the BBC for a quarter of a century, and people go, you must be mad. Why are you doing the same job? It's not the same job. I've been around the world. I've been to places where nobody had been before. It sounds like Star Trek, doesn't it? But I've done things that I could simply not do if I'd been a journalist with all the old equipment. And that has been, you know, those doors were open to me because I could go with very small amounts of gear. I could get into places, I could get into countries, and frankly, go behind the scenes, and nobody knew what I was doing. And really, what these technologies has allowed us to do is to be the same as the newspaper reporters have always been, where they have been able to go and look and record on paper what they've seen. We can now do that in a technological sense on a phone, and we are seeing the world that they saw. We've always, as radio journalists and television journalists, always felt slightly jealous and envious of newspaper reporters being able to just wander around and record their thoughts afterwards. Well, we can do it now live. This technology has changed the complete format of what a journalist is and a storyteller is. And, you know, long may it continue. There are massive changes ahead. I don't know where they're going to be. I don't know what's going to happen next. But there is, you know, the same amount of change is going to happen. And we really, really need to embrace it.
But what a strange story, isn't it? You've taken the technology around the world, and now the biggest challenge is actually waiting for it at home. And home broadcasting in Corona times might be the breakthrough of that technology, kind of in a wider scale. So this was episode number one of the Mobile Storytelling Podcast with Nick Garnett as our guest from the north of England.
Absolutely. This was number one. So please subscribe, and we will have many more interesting guests and subjects to cover in mobile journalism for the next weeks to come. Might even wander beyond the field of coronavirus, don't you think, Björn? Maybe we can skip that for a week?
I don't think basically we can skip it. As Nick said, it's just what everyone's talking about, right? You want to know, and it has so many connections to what we're doing at the moment. But maybe if people comment and share and follow us, we might be still around when Corona's not.
Absolutely. And if you have any questions or any suggestions for us, please find us on Twitter or wherever you can find us, and send us a comment, and we will use it in the future. And from us, bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye from Hamburg.